atomized is equivalent to 14 sticks of dynamite. I just want to let you know that.
Yeah, thank you. In a closed facility, like the basement of your house, you spill a cup of gasoline on the floor of the basement, you really ought to, what's the right thing to do? I guess open all the windows, evacuate the house. In other words, by that I mean bring the human beings out of the house. Because I've heard of too many stories of people trying to mop it up and getting into all kinds of trouble. And Rob is exactly right. The right way to do it is with a transfer relay. What I was doing was dangerous. A safer way is to run an extension cord from the generator to the refrigerator. A much safer way. And use the right gauge of wire. Buy a good enough extension cord that has, probably you need 12 gauge or 10 gauge wire and the right number of feet of it so you're able to operate the generator far enough distance from the house. And then to feed that to your refrigerator, which is the main thing we worry about. Although getting it to the furnace, if you've got cold weather and you need heat, and if you don't have the, I'm guessing that transfer relay nowadays, Rob, costs around $350. And if you didn't buy a couple of years earlier to prepare for this, the $350 transfer relay, and you got the generator running in the backyard at the right distance of that extension cord, to try to power the furnace is extremely difficult without that transfer relay. If you're not smart enough, you might have a comment on that one, Rob. N1GFP, K2RIW.
N1GFP, the only smart way you're going to know it is if you're a licensed electrician or got some electrical experience to be able to cut the end of that extension cord and properly wire it into your furnace there. That's the only way. And that's still even dangerous there. Like I said, the whole problem is putting power back out on the streets. I was in a situation that somebody wanted to take a generator, run the extension cords through from the outside, generator was in a proper safe area, run the length of the extension cord, and Dick is right, the length of an extension cord and the gauge on it. So all ham radio operators, you should all know that. That cord's going to heat up, so the longer the length, the gauge on it. And what's one thing that kills us is amps, not the volts. Not the wattage, it's the amps. You want to actually run the cords through a door, a metal door, pinch point. That door closes and pinches that cord for any reason, electrifies that door. Anyone grabbing it, if it doesn't short out. Want to actually take the plug and plug it into the wall, trying to power up the rest of the building, or the lights. He's putting power back out on the line, endangering everybody. Either shorten out the generator first, and that kicks off before you burn the wires in the line. Just a little educational tip for everybody. Fire doubles every minute of its time. And we had four houses we lost here in the Lower Shores there during the hurricane because of the electrical popping in and out. It ended up working itself into where it was, where it came into the house there, into the attic. Actually, it got into the attic. And because of the force of the wind, the 90-mile-an-hour winds that we had down here, once the attic and the roof opened up in fire, it just accelerated it. We had debris just flying all over the place, and I'm talking burning debris and just ripping up the house. She pulled everybody back. On top of it, we had tide coming in, almost swamping our trucks, low water pressure. It was, the elements were totally against us. But watch some videos on YouTube. Take a look at what's going on around you and think about it. And like I said, ask questions. Don't just assume, because I'll say it again and again. I'll repeat myself and repeat myself. Something you think that's saving your life can take your life. Over to you, Dick.
Yeah, you've got to treat these generators with a lot of respect. The gasoline has got to be stored outside of the house in a shed in the right kind of a properly marked container. When you run the generator, it's got to be a good number of feet away from the house in the backyard. Got to worry about the the diameter of the wire and the length of that extension cord that's powering the stuff inside the house. You're supposed to turn off the generator before refilling the tank. Almost nobody does that. You spill some of that fuel on that hot generator, and you can make a pretty nasty fire. You're supposed to turn it off before filling the tank. As I said, almost nobody does that. So you got some electrical danger, the pinching cord going through a metal door, you got to worry about that. The generator itself, if it's improperly wired, in the case of backfiring the house, what's the grounded side and the non-grounded side? You got to be careful with that one. The generator can become hot while it's running because you miswired it, and there is grounding within the house wiring. And if you make the mistake of making that that jumper cord that I described that backfeeds the socket on the outside of the house, if you wire it backwards, you know, you get the wide blade and the narrow blade. The wide blade is the ground, the narrow blade is the hot one. And if you get that backwards so that hot goes to ground of the house, the whole metal frame of the generator is now 120 volts above earth. So you go out there and touch the generator while it's running. And in theory, you're standing in wet grass with slightly conductive shoes. Look at the trouble you can get into. So you can see there's a lot of potential dangers here that are not obvious at first. You see this, let me drop it. You see this beautiful package machine at a very desirable price with a whole lot of watts of output. When you're looking in Home Depot and Lowe's and whatever, your stores where you can buy these generators, it's an extremely attractive looking thing. And you say to yourself, boy, I want to have standby power. I don't want to live without creature comforts the next time we've got another Hurricane Sandy. Gotta worry. I've got a whole lot of comments on the subject of cell phones, but before we go leave this subject, anyone else got any further questions or comments about gasoline, how to get it, gasoline for your car, how to get the gas in the car, gasoline for cans of it to run your generator, and running the generator? Before we leave that subject, anybody have further questions or comments? Give me a call, that is right now. K2LAW and the Tech Man.
WGB.
John recognized, and who is the other person?
K1MJM.
Can I make it quick?
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Okay, Dick is very, very right on generators. There actually, when you shut a generator down, there is supposed to be a cooling down period for that. If you do fill it up, do it the opposite side. Once you turn it off, do it the opposite side of the muffler. Put a rag on it. If you don't have a proper can that can fill it in there, get a proper funnel for it there. And once your generator kicks off, go to your transfer panel and turn the ones off that draw the most amp that's going to kick back on when you turn that generator on, because now you got to remember, all those switches on your transfer panel are in on mode when you turn that generator off. Once you pull that cord there, you're putting a quick surge back into your panel again there. And there's circuit breakers on the panels there. They're supposed to be anyway. But you'll know which ones draw the most amps. Turn those off for a minute. Turn the generator on. So, okay, your refrigerator's off. Your furnace is off for a minute there. Certain ones that draw those big amp surge. Once the generator's running up again, you can go back and turn them on one at a time. Let the furnace kick back on, the refrigerator, yada, yada. That's other keys there, just to be safe there. Jack, thank you very much, and I hope everybody stays safe on the net. That's all I got to say for the evening. N1 GFP.
Yeah, let me ask you a quick question on this one, Rob. What I've always done, what you're describing about turning off the heavy draw circuit breakers in the process of restarting the generator, it is a super conservative approach. It's a good thing to do. Here's what I've done instead. I turn off the generator, unplug the extension cord, fill the fuel tank of the generator, start the generator back up, then replug it in. Once the generator is up to full speed, up to the right governor RPM, making somewhere between 59 and 61 hertz of output, and generating something close to 125 volts, and you plug it in, that generator has a very finite equivalent series resistance to it, so to speak. In other words, because your house is a heavy load, because everything is now in the off mode, and you plug it in, the instantaneous voltage that it issues down that line jumps down. I put a voltmeter on it. It jumps down from the 125 volts down to about 95, and in about 1 second it comes back up again. So you get an under voltage condition. To me, that's not dangerous. There isn't an over voltage spike. Yes, when your whole house is powered and your local power company comes back on, they can come on with one hell of a high voltage spike with a zillion amperes behind it. The generator doesn't have the ability to do that. So the generator, you'll hear it straining under the load when it's trying to start up everything in your house. It, under those conditions, gives you an under voltage. And most of the appliances in the house, when they see 1 or 2 seconds of under voltage, usually don't get themselves in trouble. That's an opinion. You might have another opinion on this one, Rob. N1, GFP, K2LIW in the TechNet.
N2LDY with another quick comment.
That stays on, that's not on the generator circuit. So if the power comes back on from the utility companies, I walk in there and I see that light on, that's an indication I got power back. Generator gets shut down immediately. I know it's a pain in the neck. A lot of people say, oh, it's a lot of steps to go through, yada, yada, you know. There we go again, saying inconvenience. I'm being inconvenient. Inconvenience doesn't save your life. Proper thought, proper precaution saves your life. So once I see that light, Dick, that's lit in this basement here, off the generator, tells me that I got power coming back there. So there's an immediate shutdown there of that generator. Those other switches don't get thrown on the panel there. Now my electrician, he did a very good job here as far as that. He says, don't worry, Bob. He says, there's going to be no back kick, no nothing on here. You're right, Dick, about what you're saying there. But let me drop. Take your time. That's the whole thing. Don't rush, you know. There's no need to rush to go fill that tank and get the power back up. Television goes off, so what? The kids are watching the video, I'm sorry, you know. Let's put it this way. I'm running a Johnson Viking matchbox that's sitting over by my window, so every time I got to get to tune that up there on my radio there, on my HF, I got to get up and walk over there because the way I have a long wire. But it's an inconvenience, but it's the way it is. Take your time, take thought, take steps. Don't be cheap. N1GFD, over to you, Dick.
Yes, thank you for all of that information, Rob. I can tell by way of you being in the Greenwich Fire Department, you've seen an awful lot of horror along these lines. Now, right now, we've got three guys backed up with questions and comments. John, NJM, and LDY in that order. John, KC2WGB, go right ahead.
KC2WGB. Dick, you and Rob mentioned some great things, but it's even more involved. You know, technically the generator has a grounding load. It should be grounded. So if you have a position in the yard, you're going to place it at safe distance. You should be connecting it to the ground rod. There's also GFIs involved if you're going to use external power from the generator outside. And again, the cord should be a three-wire cord to make sure you establish continuity for the ground connections. There's so much involved, you have no idea. You also must have a disconnect switch in sight. So you could have your transfer switch, whether it's an auto transfer or a manual transfer switch, in the house, because they're expensive. You don't want to let it rust up. But at the generator, you're going to need a disconnect switch, unless the circuit breaker is the type that you can turn off and lock for safety. There's a lot of OSHA rules, and there's a lot of electrical rules, so you're probably better off getting an electrician to do the job, because if people start jumping out the A and B bus and they forget and they close the main breaker, they're going to be burned. So they just should do a lot of research. Sure, the average ham who's competent should be able to handle all of it, but it probably pays to even talk to an electrician just to double check. And even if you're just running cords and doing things the easy way, it's better to just ask questions. Just like Rob said, it's a little preventive medicine. It sure pays off in the long run. Back to you, Dick, KC2WGB.
Hey, you bring up a good point. There really should be a method of cutoff where the electrical line between generator and house joins the house. There should be a big clap switch you can flip there to disconnect things. By way of a extension cord, you could unplug the extension cord. That sounds good, but there's a problem. That jumper cord that I described that backfeeds my house has another great big danger to it. It is male on both ends. The male end that goes into the generator, no sweat. You pull that one out, you disconnect the source of power on that side on the assumption that the generator is the only thing supplying, and on the assumption that the main circuit breaker between you and your local utility is in the non-conducting mode. Then that's relatively safe. But while the generator is running, if you unplug the extension cord end that goes to the house output circuit, the output receptacle, because those blades are hot, because they are male, as you can see, you've got an electrocution possibility there. There's an awful lot of ways this damn thing can get you in trouble. Yeah, we all want creature comforts when the power goes off. And it really should be wired professionally in its own little doghouse with the right kind of transfer relays and outside cutoff circuits and whatever, protection, circuit breakers in the right place. Unfortunately, I know for a fact that 95% of the guys who own a generator haven't done any of that. I know that 95% of those guys with that generator pour the fuel into the tank while it's running, because they don't want to go through the whole procedure of cutting it off and starting it up again. They're really pushing their luck. But we all think that we're charmed. Sometimes it ain't.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
As I said, sometimes it's not so true. Okay, yeah, NJM and then LDY in that order. It sounded like Kilo 1 November Juliet Mike is what it sounded like. Please correct me. Tell me your name and then your question or comment. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Roger, that's Kilo 1 Mike Juliet Mike, and the name is Mike. And I just had a quick comment on transfer switches for you. There's a variety of transfer switches. The basic one is a 60 amp for about $100. That's just the 240 volt transfer switch. 100 amp is $139. Again, that's just the basic switch. Then they have a higher end switch. Let me break for a second here. The next switch up is it's a manual switch. It's either a 6 or 10 breaker switch or switch, different circuit switch, I'm sorry, circuit, 6 or 10 circuits, two different models. One is about $300, the other is about $500, and you could switch individual circuits. So you disconnect from each breaker to your individual transfer switches. So you can have select which circuits you want on or off. When your power comes back on, the circuits that you don't have on the transfer switch to your generator will light up in your house or turn on in your house. And then the last one is a high-end, very high-end, that uses logic, where you select, prioritize the different circuits. And when your refrigerator kicks on, it can turn your patio lights off automatically for you. That's kind of the three different switches I'm familiar with. K1 MJM.
Interesting information, Mike. What brand name of transfer relay, transfer switches are you describing? And where might I see those? If I go into Lowe's or Home Depot and I ask for brand X, and I ask for the particular brand you're going to tell me about, will they have these selections there, or do I have to buy these online? Because they do sound somewhat specialized. K1 Mike, Juliet Mike, K2RIW.
I believe Home Depot is going to have the basic single switch, 240 volt switch, transfer switch, and I believe they also have a multiple circuit transfer switch. The ones I'm looking at right now are, the brand name is Reliance, and I'm looking in the Northern Tool Catalog.
Okay, that's good information. Reliance and the Northern Tool Catalog. And you believe that Home Depot will be selling it. Let me think now. What's the name of... Oh, Harbor Freight. Do you think that Harbor Freight might have a thing like that? Mike, go ahead.
K1MJM. I have not seen anything except the basic transfer switch at Harbor Freight. I've been to the stores and looked in their catalogs, and only the basic 240-volt, 60 or 100-amp single switch is the only thing I've seen there. They may have it, but that's all I've seen.
Granger, Dick.
Okay, the Granger catalog probably has it. That's a good, another good source of things like this. Granger, Harbor Freight, Home Depot, Lowe's, and online. Once you know, Reliance is the brand name, and the Northern Hydraulic, I think it is, catalog, Northern Tools, Northern Hydraulic Tools, something like that. All of these extra fancy switches, I don't think the average guy needs that, but that's just me. Because the power outage, although it may last for a couple of days, it only happens once per 5 years or once per 10 years. Do you need all of that luxury, so to speak? I'm willing to live a Spartan life. And lucky for me, my hold-on, old-fashioned house is a 60-ampere house. So for me to buy a 60-ampere, 240-volt transfer switch, and if I can buy it for $135 or whatever you said, that's a pretty nice price, and that's the right thing to do. Many people in my neighborhood have 200-ampere houses, and to buy a transfer switch for 200 amperes, it's going to cost you a lot more money, and it's a much bigger installation, in my opinion, which really needs professional installation. So there's more to it. And I noticed that you didn't go as high as 200 amperes. As I said, many of the houses in my neighborhood are 200 amperes. I'm having trouble understanding why they need that much. If you buy a modern-day, let me drop. If your household central air conditioner has a reasonable EER rating, if your refrigerator is not filling up the whole damn room, that's a walk-in refrigerator. I'll admit that the electric range, if you want to run every one of the burners on the electric range and the oven and the microwave oven all simultaneously while the electric power dryer is running and your electric heater on the hot water heater is running because everybody's taking showers, yes, you can come up with those kind of numbers. My hot water heater is oil-fired. I do have an electric range, an electric oven, and a microwave oven, and a toaster. But I've instructed the family that under Spartan conditions, run them one at a time. Don't run everything at once. You don't need that much luxury. And when you're running on a generator, if you overdo it, in my case, the Winco Earth Energy System generator has a circuit breaker on it. And even if it didn't have a circuit breaker, it would simply stall. It's somewhat foolproof if you overdo it. So I would be tempted in a 200-ampere house to install a 60-ampere transfer relay. You can't do that. Because when you're on the powered side, the full power from the Connecticut Power and Light, so to speak, has to flow through that transfer switch. So if you've got a 200-ampere house, you've got to buy a 200-ampere switch. That's my strong belief. I'm going to send it back to Mike for a confirmation on that. K1 Mike Juliet Mike, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, K1MJM. Yes, the one with the 6-circuit transfer switch or the 10-circuit transfer switch, you only pick individual circuits that you want to use at that particular time. All you're doing is pulling the wire off of each individual breaker and feeding that one breaker into your transfer switch and then back into your breaker again. So when you throw the transfer switch, you basically bypass the breaker from the power company, from your main. And you mentioned other size transfer switches. This catalog has up to 800-amp transfer switches in here.
Comment?
Yeah, what's the approximate price of the 200-ampere single-circuit type, Mike? Go ahead.
200-amp, one phase. It's the it's 240-volt, but it's one phase. It's about $700.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. But if I can break out certain circuit breakers so that I only need 60 amps worth, just that portion of the house, okay. I can, in other words, some of the house will stay on commercial power, some of it will be on generator power. Interesting. So I can tap into a portion of the house, the portion that I think is vital, like the refrigerator and the furnace. Okay. Copper wiring is the way to go. We've got Don and then comment in that order. Don, N2LDY, K2RIW, go ahead.
Yes. Just one other question, you know, glad you got it back to me. In your method, when you're clip lead from the A to the B in the panel, can you just clarify what you do with the 220 breakers, the 220 volt breakers, you know, the common ones like your dryer that runs on 220 or your range? Do you flip those off and alleviate those out of the circuit altogether when you're running that circuit? Because I'm pretty sure you have to do that. And just clarify that in case somebody needs to know.
Good question, Don. And the answer is no. When you make a clip lead, this is a dangerous procedure. When you put a clip lead between the A and the B phase of the house, between the red wire and the black wire, and you're making sure you're doing that on the far side of the, in my case, cartridge fuse, in your case, circuit breaker, on the far side away from the commercial power. I'm putting in parallel the A side and the B side. Normally it has 220, and I'm now putting them in parallel so they both got 120. 240 versus 120, you know what I mean. They got 120. The dryer, the range, everything that runs on 220 is now getting 0 volts. It has 120 volts from each side to ground, but because it is a 220 volt piece of appliance, it is looking for the positive phase and negative phase. The red wire to ground is 120. The black wire to ground is 120. But because they're 180 degrees out of phase, there's 240 between them. The way the Paul Pig transformer works is that the secondary winding with the 240 really is a secondary winding with center tap. The center tap is the ground. It's 120 volts each side of, from reference to ground, but 240 across the whole winding. The 240 across the whole winding is what goes to the electric range and the electric dryer. When you make the A and the B on your side of the wiring together, they get 0 volts. You don't have to worry about pulling that circuit breaker. Somebody can by mistake turn on the dryer and nothing happens. Turn on the electric range, nothing happens. Oh, I guess the motor in the electric dryer, which runs on 110, the dryer, the tumbler may turn, but the heating element doesn't turn on. So from that point of view, at least in my...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
At least in that point of view, in my house, it appears to be safe, because I've intentionally gone and turned on those 220 volt appliances while I'm in this power, this parallel wiring mode, and nothing happens. Do you see what I'm saying on that one, Don? N2LDY, K2RIW.
Okay, I guess I see what you're saying. I personally probably would just leave them off and err on the side of caution, you know. Thanks a lot, Dick, and have a good evening. Good night.
You're absolutely right, Don. To be on the safe side, flip off that circuit breaker. And if my fuse panel had circuit breakers and it was so simple to just simply flip that switch, I would do it. I've got an old-fashioned house with cartridge fuses and the screw-in type fuses. And to unscrew those fuses is a bit more of a pain, and I don't bother doing it. Oh, wait a minute. The cartridge fuse, all I've got to do is pull that out and the whole assembly comes out of my hand. I could do that, but I haven't been doing it. There's a person who said comment. Who was that? Give me your full set of call letters and your name if I don't already know it from tonight. K2RIW. Go ahead, comment.
N1GST, it's Rob again. Just everybody's got to remember, this is a temporary thing of inconvenience. You're not, like Dick said, you're not looking to power up the whole house. I have a 10 switch panel. Priority, furnace. Priority, refrigerator. Second luxury, in light, not in all the rooms, not throughout all the house. We went, the other half and I sat down with the electrician and told her what the essential stuff was. Furnace, refrigerator, the stove, which is propane, but it is electric igniters there. You could use a match, but then we can't use the oven. So we picked out what we had to do, the bathroom fan. We did the computer room, so we have a little luxury. The living room, which is a home theater system, as long as our cable's not out, which unfortunately we did. And a few other things. The garage, which is wired because the shop is out there. So once in time, I may have to fix something and run something, low voltage there, and make sure the garage door is open so stuff that's got to get out of there. The mother-in-law came over the other day and wanted to take a shower because she lives down the street and had no power. Well, she whined, why isn't this wired? Why isn't this light wired? Why isn't this wired? I said, this is what it is, the essentials. We're a temporary situation. We're not living in a lap of luxury, which we're not living anyway, even when we had the power. And she rattled on, well, if my son wired this house, I said, you know, in all due respect, Mom, then go stay at your son's house. We invite you up to take a shower, yada, yada, yada. So just remember, it's temporary. And if any of you is deciding to change over your stove, take deep thought about it right now that you may want to switch over to propane because your stove is not going to run on your generator, your dryer is not going to run on your generator. My washing machine ran on our generator with no problem. And we went back to the old-fashioned way, hanging our clothes up, which was no problem for me because I lived in the Catskills for over 10 years with no running water, no electricity, so... You all have to get used to inconvenience, and it's just, you know, it's being safer. I can't stress that enough there. You guys probably are ready to cover your ears, but I go to this stuff all the time. And, Dick, this is my last year on the fire department, so I won't be going to this stuff anymore. N1GSA, back to you, Dick.
Awful glad you signed in tonight. You've given us some darn good information from the fireman's point of view, where you've seen the horror of these people making some very foolish mistakes. And boy, there's a lot of them you can make with a generator, with falling trees. It turns out that I have a website for my consulting business, and the reporter from the New Scientist in London wanted to find out what's going on with Hurricane Sandy. And she was calling a whole lot of telephones in the New York City area and getting no response. Well, she finally found me. What is a quick description of what I saw? And the answer was when the hurricane had finally calmed down late Monday night, I took a quick walk around the block of my house, and one of the things I noticed is, of course, a whole lot of downed trees and a whole lot of downed power lines. And yeah, you're not supposed to be out there. And I'm out there with a flashlight, walking very slowly in the middle of the road, and trying to stay away from the falling trees and the power lines that were down. As I noticed, as I'm walking around, every 60 seconds to maybe 2 minutes, I would see a flash on the horizon. Those flashes were trees bringing down power lines, the high-tension power lines, 13.2 kilovolts, that was either arcing the ground or blowing the fuse on the pole peg transformer. Every 60 seconds, I was seeing those white flashes on the horizon, usually a white flash with no sound because it was occurring more than a mile away from me. And it would take 5 seconds for the sound to propagate that one, and most of them didn't make that much sound. Also, let me drop that major substation transformer that also became shorted out with salt water in Manhattan. There's quite a few news reports that will show you that particular scene over and over again. A very bright flash that lasted five or so seconds when the, I'm guessing that was a half megavolt of primary voltage going into that transformer that suddenly got hit with salt water. And until that fuse blew and that circuit disconnected itself, lots of violence took place there. And in a rather small period of time, I'm amazed they were able to repair that damage and get that portion of Manhattan back in operation. So I got quoted in New Scientist for these flashes on the horizon, and then the Huffington Report read New Scientist, and they called me up for a confirmation. I made the mistake of calling it explosion of whole pitch transformers. I suddenly realized that that's probably very inaccurate. Let me drop. If there was that kind of a short circuit on the secondary wiring of the whole pitch transformer, first of all, you would probably blow the primary fuse. Second of all, even if you're drawing enough current to not blow the primary fuse, but overheating the transformer, very difficult combination, to actually heat up that oil inside the transformer enough for its overprotection valve not to relieve the pressure, and then for it to explode. An extremely rare event. I was very inaccurate on that one. So what I call pole pig transformer explosion, yes, it looks like that if you're in the neighborhood. It's the 13.2 kilovolts going into the primary. That's doing the flashing because of a tree bringing down the 13.2 kilovolt wiring, bringing it to ground and arcing to the tree and arcing to earth and whatever. Another very dangerous condition. Before we leave this subject, I wonder if anyone else was seeing those flashes on the horizon. It looks like lightning if you don't know what you're looking at, except that it's got the wrong duration and it doesn't make the normal lightning sound. K2LIW listening. Anyone else got any further comments on this one?
Dick, can I say one thing, then I'm going to step out for tonight?
Go ahead, Rob.
I thank you, everybody, being patient. We'll get off the soapbox in a minute. N1GFP, Friday. I've been by transformers that exploded, and it's a frightening thing. If a transformer comes down on the ground, stay away from it. It's hazmat. As soon as a transformer comes down and breaks open, it's a hazmat situation. We got to get specialized people to come in, clean up the mess there. The stuff that's in there, you do not want to be near. I've been primary lines not too far that have come down and hit the ground and exploded. Let me tell you, it took me time to get my vision back. You can feel the heat. You can feel the hair standing up on your arms like a lightning bolt. It's not something to play around with. A storm comes there, it's done with, there's lines down, do not go out. Wait a while. You never know, there's a line laying down there underneath the branch and stuff. So like I said, it's, yeah, I've seen those, Dick. You see that bright light, a little bit of orange flashed in there, but yeah, it's a sight to see there. It's amazing. And just the sound of a primary line still staying live, laying on the ground, it's just like rings right through your chest there. So people just stay inside for a while, stay away. Thank you, Dick. I'm sorry if I went on a little bit too long, but I'm trying to stress to you people, it's not a game. It's dangerous out there. Stay back. Let us guys do the work. Let us clean up quick as possible to keep you guys safe there. And just take a step back and take a thought, you know, what you're doing. N1GFP, over to you, Dick. And good night to everybody on the net, and be safe, and I hope everybody gets cleaned up soon.
I am going to have one follow-up question for you, Rob. And stop apologizing. You've given us some damn good information. Awful glad you checked in tonight. And you're doing it from the real point of view of the first responders that see all this horror of where people make these mistakes. The one saving grace for me taking this walk around my neighborhood late Monday night is that 960,000 customers on Long Island are without power. 90% of the power on Long Island to homes did not exist. My whole community, my southern Huntington, Dix Hills community, every single house was without power. The whole community was completely dark. That's a very big disadvantage as far as creature comforts are concerned. It's a bit of a safety as far as the fact that all power was gone, therefore nothing was electrified. So when I'm walking around at midnight with a flashlight in my hand, in the middle of the road, far away from the trees, far away from the transformers, it was not quite as unsafe as it ordinarily would be because none of that wiring was hot. It was all cold. Every single house was dark, except for one house in 50 that had a generator in the backyard. Now, it is my belief, Rob, that an exploding pole pig transformer, line transformer, is a very rare event. I'll bet you, in as bad as all of the damage was during this particular Hurricane Sandy, you might not have seen any ruptured cases of pole pig transformers. Is my guess, But you're the man. You were there. N1GST, K2RIW.
We had two hit the ground. That's usually when you're going to get the breakage. You know, they're exploding on the pole there. It's usually the circuit breaker's blowing. That's what you hear. So it's not the whole entire casing, everything. It's when they those are circuit breakers blowing that you hear. And it's a pretty loud sound there. You'll know it there. Like the 4th of July. It's when one breaks off a pole and comes down from a tree and hits the ground. That's the chemical, the PCCs, and all that bad stuff in there that starts leaking out. We contain that. We classify that as a hazmat situation. We actually have a special company comes in and does all the mop up there, and then we pull out there. You know what, Dick? My theory is a down wire is treating it like a handgun. Treat it like it's loaded, like a live round is in it. You never know. You know, usually not. It's 90%, 99% of the time I've come across and stuff like that. But I always look at it, treat it. I step around it, step away from it, you know. Don't make contact with it there. So that's all I can take to say, Dick. N1GFP over you.
I'd like to believe that the specification for a pole pitch transformer is such that in the worst case scenario of a tree falling on the wiring and pulling it down and it rips off the pole and hits the ground, I'd like to believe that the specification for the case is such that the case is strong enough that it's not likely to rupture when it hits dirt, earth. Yes, if it hits a chunk of concrete, maybe. But the number of those that you've seen that were really ruptured and spilling out the PVC oil or whatever it was, I'd like to believe that that's a somewhat rare event. And by the way, yes, you're absolutely right. I treated every wiring as if it's live, didn't come near it, wouldn't touch them, and so on. But my whole community was completely dead during this walk, and that made it a little safer for me, and I know I was pushing my luck, but I wanted to see what was going on, how many trees had fallen. Boy, a lot of these 85-foot, 100-year-old oak trees that had fallen across major highways in my neighborhood, major roads. So am I right in assuming that the case is usually a pretty strong thing, and the case rupturing, I'd like to believe, is kind of rare because of the way they are specified and built? N1GFP, K2LAW.
Yeah, N1GFP. No, you're right, Dick. It's not a common thing, but I've been to quite a few of them. It's just like anything. You know, you take an iPhone, you got it in a protective case, you know, they say, oh, it's from this many feet, but it's the right way, right angle, right on the edge there, and breaks the phone. The same thing with those casings, you know. I treat everything with specs and everything, and everything's not 100% guaranteed as written. It's like my father, who was a machine and tool die maker. He used to come in a shop and go, oh, look here, you know, this and yada, yada, yada. My father said, yeah, it looks good on paper. Let's try it first, you know. So everything, it's got its forwards and backwards there, you know, specifications, whatever, but conditions aren't always 100%. Like you're testing ballistics there through the gel. You shoot it through a gel, yeah, but that's not a human being there, you know. It's close, but it's not. But yeah, we've had them hit the ground just at the right angle, just spill out there, you know. Not splashing out, but leaking enough that, you know, it's classified. We can't get near, keep everybody back, call the team in there. But, all right. We do have to go to work tomorrow, so we're usually not up this late. But it was an interesting net, and I just want to, you know, give everybody, you know, some kind of headway there, what to expect, what not to do, and hopefully it was helpful anyway. And, John, it's good to hear you. Sometime we got to talk up on the upper frequency there. So, again, Dick, 7-3s and 7-3s are the nets, everybody. Be good. Be safe. And hope to talk to you again. N1GFP, back to you, Dick.
Yeah, thanks again, Rob. I want to say a couple of words on cell phones, and that is I'm a little bit amazed about the way people treat cell phones. The cell phones looked very desirable. to disconnect your twisted pair wire in the house and go over to the cell phone with its convenience and its portability seems like the right way to go for a lot of people. But of all the people I work with and come in contact with, because I'm a ham radio operator, I've used handy talkies, and if I'm going to some event, like, say, for instance, the New York City Marathon, the first question I ask myself is how many batteries should be in my pocket with the right kind of protective plastic thing on the top to make sure it can't short out to my change. But how many spare batteries must I carry to make sure I've got enough light for enough hours for the function at the New York City Marathon? Okay. You ask almost every one of the friends you've got, how many spare batteries do they carry for their cell phone? They'll say, what? What's that? What are you talking about? Okay. Is the battery in your cell phone a replaceable item? What are you talking about? Why should I want to replace the battery? okay. Did you use only the appliances they shipped to you in the box when you bought the cell phone? Did you buy the cigarette lighter charger? Your automobile has got this humongous big battery and a great big source of power. You could always be charging your cell phone from the cigarette lighter. Well, why would I want to do that? And you see these lines of people during this event doing two things. One, charging their cell phone because they didn't buy that inexpensive item to charge it from the cigarette lighter. And number two, even when the cell phone is charged and running, they can't understand why the cell phone's not working. The fact that either the circuits are overloaded or they happen not to live in a high-priority area. What do you mean by high-priority area? The high-priority areas, the cell sites, have a standby generator. Probably only half the cell sites have that. The majority of them have only a backup battery system that's good for some number of hours, and then the cell site goes dead. If you're not living in the right area, your cell phone appears to go dead. Well, it's either too busy or it's out of power because there's no standby generator. And that's an economic thing. If the cell site is near a major convention center, yes, it's going to have a backup generator system. If it's in your particular residential community, quite possibly it doesn't have a backup battery system. So the people who have kept their wired telephone seem to have quite a bit more reliability. Another group of people say, well, I can save a whole lot of money by going to cable TV, telephone system. Well, in quite a few communities, the cable TV system goes out because in the case of an RF-type coaxial cable TV system, you need 14 amplifiers per mile to amplify that signal that's coming X number of miles from the central station over to your house for cable TV, RF cable TV. And all of those individual amplifiers have to be powered by the local power supply of the pole big transformer in that neighborhood. They don't, in most cases, they don't send the power down the semiconductor for very far distance, probably only a couple of those amplifiers at a time. So the cable TV goes out, you lose the telephone. You'd be amazed how many people didn't realize that they don't have a super reliable telephone for situations like this. In the case of fiber optic telephone, it's a bit more reliable because the fiber can go quite a few miles without an amplifier. That's the good news. But in order for the audio circuit coming out of your handpiece of the telephone to get onto the fiber...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
For that audio to get out of your handpiece of your telephone into that fiber requires a electronic circuit backed up by a battery. So if you've got Verizon fiber, for instance, telephone, that battery is good for, let me pick a number, 8 hours. After 8 hours, that battery goes dead, you don't have a telephone, unless you've got a generator or some other method of powering up that particular jail cell. So telephone reliability, in particular cell phone reliability, rechargeability, and life of the cell site station itself. My goodness, is there a whole lot of misconceptions there. And people who think that the cell site is radio-wise dangerous, it is absolutely not. And there are people saying, I don't want that in my neighborhood, but I want reliable cell phone service, which, of course, is a conflict. Guarantee you guys have got some opinions on all of this. K2RIW listening. Give me your call letters.
You and GFP, you're not going to let me go to sleep, are you?
We're discussing such interesting subjects. You've got such great experience, and you're such an interesting guy. How the hell can we let go of you, Rob? N1GFP, K2RIW.
All right, we'll try to make this quick and sweet. I am a first responder, and my first thing is that I depend on my phone a lot of times, so I don't use my phone as an entertainment center. My battery life is very, very important. I've dropped two carriers because of dropped calls in my area, because I told them I can't tolerate this, I can't deal with this, drop calls. I am dropping you, you are not charging me. I believe a cell phone is for communications. Yes, I Google on the internet and stuff like that. My phone, I like my iPhone. I can go all day long and still come home with 50%, and that's even Googling on the internet. But I have a car charger, and get an iGo car charger. Because if you change your phone, you just change your tip for $10. You don't have to buy a whole new charger. I have an iGo charger in the car. I have a plug-in adapter to go in the house and whatever. I've got chargers all over the place. Your phone's not an entertainment system. Your phone is a sense of communication. And the first time in my life as a first responder having a cell phone, in the time cell phones have been out, our towers went down because of battery backup. I had no cell phone communication whatsoever. Dead. The only thing I could depend on is the ham radio I have here and the ham radio in my truck and my fire radio communications. So it's a thing of communication. It's not an entertainment tool, especially during disaster times. Make sure that phone is fully charged. You have capabilities, like Dick says, in your car, whatever. Don't play around with it. N1 GFP, we do have to go to bed, Dick. Thank you again, everybody. N1 GFP, we're gone.
You see lots of people who need a reliable cell phone system, Rob. Among your firemen, don't give me that answer. Among the non-firemen, the normal citizens in your neighborhood, in your community, what percentage of those people have the ability to charge the cell phone from the automobile? I'll be amazed if it's much above 40%. Over to you, Rob.
Yeah, probably 40, because I'll look at them and go, you don't have a car charger? They go, no. I've actually, people go, do you have a charger? Can you charge my phone? And I've said to them, and I got introduced to the iGo charger. I bought it at Radio Shack. I think it was $30. I changed my phones a couple of times in since then, and I was able to buy it. It's a $10 tip instead of a whole $30 charger from Verizon, Sprint, Nextel, AT&T, T-Mobile. I just had to change the tip for $10. I still had the charger. Now they have the new chargers, iGo chargers, is USB. So you can plug USB stuff in there. You can charge your iPods and whatever. It's a great thing. It's the best thing since sliced bread. Everyone here in the family has an iGo charger, and I love it. So that's the way to go. Dick, I do have to go. We hope everybody's safe until next week, and maybe we'll bring this up next week. Maybe we'll have another discussion on safety on whatever. But again, thanks again for everybody listening, and again, stay safe. N1 GFP, back to you, Dick.
Thanks again, Rob. Yeah, cell phones, the average person who buys a cell phone today, they want all the horns and whistles and internet and WAN and LAN and, oh man, download, upload. They want to be able to internet connection and download movies. They want all of these capabilities. Every one of those extra things draws current. My son is a serious cell phone user of the spark in time. He wants the cell phone to give him emergency communication. He intentionally buys a cell phone that has no horns and whistles, no text messaging capability, no downloading capability. And so as such, his very simple cell phone, he charges it once, uses it every day, and it doesn't run out for a week because he's bought a very simple cell phone without all those extra features. All those extra features are drawing current. If you want reliability, you want to have at least one cell phone that's really spartan with nothing in it per se except voice communication capability and or the way of recharging it with a car battery, with the cigarette lighter of the car. I know we're going to be cut off pretty soon. One of the things that I have not had a chance to say for many months is that you guys got to be kind to each other. I used to say that this was TechNet number 4123. Anybody else want to say any? Hey, John, I know we didn't get a chance to go to the mailbag tonight, but I think we did some other service here. KC2, WGB, K2LIW. Go ahead, John.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Dick. It was a good night, and that information's needed. And maybe next week we'll be talking about the nor'easter that's on its way. It's supposed to hit by Wednesday. So, yeah, be kind to each other and have fun. This is a hobby, and this hobby happened to help a lot of people. Well, I think we did a good job. Back to you, Dick.
Excellent timing. It's just starting, the machine is just starting. The machine is just starting to cut off at this time.
Bye-bye, guys. Good night, John.
Who's
more subjects. I'm getting a lot of flack about it, though. But, again, we'll talk soon, John. You know, we always have good discussions there. And it's always good to talk with you. Be safe. Good night. 7-3.
KB2WGB, NY2H. Hello, good morning. Yeah, good morning, John. I heard what you said, and you're right, with the graffiti.